He would conclude that surah by saying, "Wa ana min ash-shahidin." Okay, yes, indeed, I am among the witnesses. And inshallah, in the following episode, we will discuss more reports and more adab, more etiquettes according to the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, as reported in Allama's Sunan An-Nabi. Until then, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Be like Muhammad, live like Muhammad, see like Muhammad did. Be like Muhammad and live like Muhammad and give like Muhammad gave. Shafi'ullah, Habibullah, Nabiullah, Rasulullah, Khalilullah, the friend of Allah, Ya Rasulullah, Rasulullah.
Face-to-Face.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Face-to-Face. I'm Humane Abedi, and in this program, I'm going to have an interview with Iran's energy minister, Dr. Reza Ardakhanian, who is here with us to share his thought with us. Dr. Ardakhanian, thank you very much for accepting invitation. As the first question, please explain in general about the achievements of your ministry, especially after the victory of the Islamic Revolution back in 1979 in the field of water and electricity supply to remote areas of the country.
Thank you very much for inviting me, and it's a pleasure to be with you. Ministry of Energy in Iran is in charge of water and electricity. In general, means thermal power plants, hydropower plants, and renewable energy. And when it comes to the water, it's about constructing and managing large dams, as well as irrigation and drainage networks. Also distributing water for different sectors, for domestic, in urban and rural areas, also for agriculture, for industries, and providing water for environmental protection. My ministry also collects wastewater and try to treat them and reusing treated wastewater. So all in all, this ministry deals with each and everyone in the country, in urban areas, in rural areas, and day and night we have to provide enough safe and clean and secure water as well as electricity for the whole population. 42 years ago, when Islamic Revolution came on stage and we started to serving our people in different way, that time the installed capacity in terms of power plants was just about 7,000 megawatts in the country. And nowadays, while population is 2.3 times, the installed capacity of power plants is about 12 times than that time. So it means that we have achieved a good level of progress as well as facilities, not only for domestic purposes but also for development of the country in different area because of the role of energy as an infrastructure. Also, we have started recently working on renewable energies in terms of wind and solar. For sure, 42 years ago, it was zero. And now we have about 870 megawatts of solar and wind renewable energy. And in terms of hydro, also we have established many large dams with hydropower facilities. And I think it's more than 12,000 megawatts while this number was less than 2,000 40 years ago. This has provided us a good infrastructure in the country, and also in terms of water, if we look at the statistics worldwide, this time in the urban areas, the coverage in the world is about 96% for electricity. In Iran is 100%. And in rural areas, for electricity, the coverage worldwide is about 79%. In Iran is 99.7%. So it means almost each and everyone in the country has access to electricity. When it comes to the water, the situation even is more brighter. And I may say 42 years ago, we had just four wastewater treatment plants in the country located in four major cities, and none of them was able to cover the whole city. And I think less than 2 million population were covered by wastewater treatment plants. Just a few days ago, our president inaugurated, among many other projects, one of the high-tech wastewater treatment plant in Kurdistan province in Kamyaran. And it was number 246, means that we have designed and constructed and operated 242 wastewater treatment plant during these four decades. But most of the progress came during the last 7-8 years. And now we are in the position of reporting that every month we are inaugurating one wastewater treatment plant. Every 2 months we are inaugurating one water treatment plant. And every 50 days, less than a month, during last 7 years, we have inaugurated and operated a new large dams. So this means that Iran is in a good shape in terms of infrastructure for water and electricity.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your thorough answer. Would you please tell us more about the progress of the Ministry of Energy in recent years in terms of export of energy, especially, I mean, electricity to other countries?
So when we have established power plants 12 times than it was 40 years ago, while the population has been increased just less than 2.5 times. It means that we have invested a lot for the network. So we are in a good location in terms of geography. We have good connection with all neighboring countries. I may say from southeast with Pakistan, then Afghanistan, Turkmenistan, Armenia, Azerbaijan, Turkey, Iraq, which with each and every neighboring countries, we have electricity connection. Exporting, importing, it depends on the time of the year. In some cases, we are just exporter. In some cases, we have transaction of energy in different months of the year. And we think that in the near future, we may also bring renewable energy in this network to be exported to the neighboring countries. We have announced to all investors in private sector that we provide them permission and access to our network that they export their own, say, electricity generated by wind towers and solar panels to the neighboring countries based on the contracts they sign with them. So I think right now we are in a good shape. If ourselves do not need electricity we can, I mean, provide it to neighboring countries, and in some cases we are importing when we need them.
Thank you. Today we are witnessing the export of technical knowledge of Iranian specialists abroad. Can you please elaborate that in which countries we have implemented or we are implementing projects both independently or jointly with other countries?
Look, in the world, usually they remember Iran as a country with major sources of oil and gas as the source of wealth in this country. But in reality, our major wealth is our human resources. And if we utilize this source in a right way in terms of education, training, and using human resources in the right places, I think we are good enough not only to respond to the needs of our country, but also we may have a major role in development and progress of the region. As you mentioned, many Iranian contractors and consulting engineers right now are active in the region, even outside our region. They are working in Africa, and they are winning the bids for major projects in terms of designing and building large dams, hydropower plants, thermal power plants. It's now, I believe, 6 years consecutively that Ministry of Energy of Iran means that water and electricity sector in Iran is in the first place in terms of exporting technical services and engineering services worldwide. So we have thousands of companies now are active in building equipments in energy sector, and many companies both in consulting engineering area as well as contractors working on large dams, on designing and constructing water and wastewater treatment plants. This is another source for employment and also for a good level of friendship and connection, especially with the neighboring countries.
Can you please tell us the name of some of these countries that currently Iran is implementing?
So we have worked and we are working in Iraq, mainly in the energy sector. While also in other part of development in Iran, in Iraq, Iranian companies are active. Minister of Energy now, based on the decision of the Iranian government, is in charge of joint economic commission between Iran and different countries. I myself am in charge with Iraq, with Armenia, Russian Federation, Afghanistan, Tajikistan, as well as state of Qatar in the region, and some other countries like Sri Lanka outside our region. So in Iraq, we have major projects, mainly in the energy sector, but also in other part in construction of sport fields, as well as dam construction. In Tajikistan, we have constructed hydropower plants, also working on the road construction and connecting different parts of the countries in terms of using TBMs for tunnel projects. In Sri Lanka, the Iranian companies have designed and constructed and operated a major hydropower plants, soon will be officially inaugurated by officials of both countries. In Africa, many Iranian private sector companies are active in different projects.
Very well. Dr. Ardakhanian, many say that the world's future war would be over water. And in face of water scarcity across the globe, what are the energy ministry's mechanisms to cope with this issue?
If many say and talk about war on the water, so it means that not all the people, and some of them do not talk about the war, and I am among those people who are not a believer in the war on the water. And instead, I think that those people who are talking about the war on the water in the future, they are somehow paving the way for some potential conflicts. And they want to normalize this issue of conflicts on the water. Then they go for fishing themselves out of these potential conflicts. But regardless of this argument, Iran is in a very unique situation worldwide in terms of shared water and inter-boundary basin issues. We have many countries in the world that they are in living in the inter-boundary basins in terms of water and sharing water with their neighboring countries. But they all are either upstreamer or downstreamer. If they are downstreamer, like for example in MENA region, like a big country like Egypt, they know what to do as a downstreamer, right? And this position affects on different area in terms of even engineering, mathematical modeling, and so on. And some countries are upstreamer, and they know how to deal with the issue. But Iran is a country that is upstreamer, at the same time is a downstreamer. In the east part of the country, we are in the downstream of inter-boundary basin with our neighbors, Afghanistan. In the west part of the country, we are in the upstream of the basin with our neighbor, Iraq. Also, we have shared rivers in the north, northeast, northwest. We have Harirud River with Turkmenistan. We have Aras River with Armenia and Azerbaijan. So it means that Iran is in a very unique situation in terms of dealing with different aspects of the shared water and living in the inter-boundary basin. Is this a challenge? Yes. But also, it's an opportunity. And if we do things in a correct way, if we rely on water scarcity as a source of being closer and closer and working on it as an opportunity for friendship and cooperation, then we come to the point to say that either a scarcity of water or somehow droughts and this kind of climate situation is not a source of being worried when it comes to dealing with the neighboring countries. We can open new chapters and working with our neighbors to share benefits and cost of water. We can look at the water as a source of cooperation. When we have flood, when we are facing droughts, both of them can be used as the reasons to work closer with the neighboring areas. So recently we have started to establish a national center for shared water and inter-boundary basin issues to, improve the level of cooperation, first of all, at the national level between different ministries and authorities, and then going to our neighboring countries and offering many different projects for cooperation. So in the long run, I think we can take advantage of water scarcity in our region to work closely with our neighboring countries and share whatever of the knowledge and experience and technical expertise that we have with our neighbors. And I think it will help us to overcome the negative aspect of water scarcity. So all in all, I do not believe in war on water.
And are all of our neighbors willing to cooperate in this regard?
When it comes to development, we should know that the main aspects of development is the human resources development. Building dams, power plants, roads, and other facilities and infrastructures alone is not the sign of development. The major and main development aspects in the mind of the people. That's why that right now in the world they do not divide the regions or the countries to developed and developing. And they talk about the people. Either I am a developed citizen worldwide, or I am developing. So we have to invest and work more on education and training. And I'm sure that in our region, with lots of cultural connection that we have with our neighbors, we can build upon that bridge and work together. I may say that we have good sign of interest from our neighboring countries working together, and so the people should not be worried about that.
I do really appreciate your full comments, Dr. Adakanyan, and I wish you all the best in your career.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this edition of Face to Face. I'm Human Abedi.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters in faith. Welcome to the program, Ulama Speech. In today's program, we're going to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Misbah Yazdi. Please stay tuned.
بخوام تمدن اسلامی داشته باشیم، قدم اولش اینه که مبانی فکریش رو درست بفهمیم.
If we want to have an Islamic civilization, the first step is to understand our intellectual fundamentals properly. Because if it doesn't possess a root then, and the parable of the bad words is that of a bad tree, uprooted from the ground, it has no stability. The Holy Quran, Surah 14, Ayah 26. So, for a proper Islamic civilization to exist, the right culture of Islam and the correct beliefs are a requirement. And then the other sciences that can help achieve these goals that we mentioned. And therefore, we say that the most important element of the true Islamic revolution was the cultural element. Perhaps it is primarily the cultural element. Other elements are a consequence of the system being an Islamic system. May Allah resurrect the soul of the Imam Khomeini with the prophets and the saints. May Allah resurrect our martyrs with the martyrs of Karbala. May Allah protect the shadow of the great leader, Imam Khomeini, over us. Despite the adversity, ignorance that we possess, may Allah increase the blessings in His existence. Thank you so much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Misbah Yazdi. Until next time, we leave you in Allah's care.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
40% of mid-range teachers in the U.S., those with 21 to 30 years of teaching experience, the people who are mentors and leaders in many schools, have indicated that they are likely to resign or retire early. This is really disturbing. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Eleanor J. Bader, journalist. This article is published under the heading, In the absence of COVID safety plans, American teachers are resigning and retiring early. Stay tuned for the details, please. This should have been Cheryl Doberly's 40th year as a teacher, but in August 2020, she resigned from her position with the Duval County Board of Education in Jacksonville, Florida. It was dreadful to think about continuing, Doverly told reporters. I would not have been able to stay safe because I was responsible for teaching to the entire school, 500 to 600 kids. The job, she says, required her to go from classroom to classroom, even though the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention warned that signing with others can spread COVID-19. The job was not worth my life, she says. Like Doverly, Kristen Weher, also a teacher, left her position in the Metro Atlanta area this fall. She had taught for just 3.5 years. When the schools closed in March, I had a great remote teaching experience, she says. The students were very engaged, and despite some initial disorganization, it worked well, and I ended up loving teaching from home. But when Vehar's district decided to move to a hybrid school in October, holding in-person classes from 7:15 a.m. to 2:15 p.m. 4 days a week, with Wednesdays as a remote teaching and learning day, she resigned. The reason was fear of catching and spreading the virus. My mom is 63 and she lives with me, Vehar told reporters. She is a 3-time cancer survivor and an amputee with a compromised immune system, so there was absolutely no way for me to give her the care she deserves and continue to teach in person. A fall 2020 survey conducted by the National Education Association confirms that neither Doverly nor Vehar are unusual. Teachers with less than 10 years in are leaving the profession, NEA President Becky Pringle told reporters. And 40% of mid-range teachers, those with 21 to 30 years of teaching experience, the people who are mentors and leaders in many schools, have indicated that they are likely to resign or retire early. This is really disturbing. Michelle Fleece, a technology teacher in a Brooklyn, New York elementary and middle school, has taught for 23 years and is in this demographic. I can't get my position once I've put in 25 years and reach age 55, she says. I have less than 2 years to go, and while COVID is not the only reason I want to leave the profession, it is a factor. Her fury toward the City Board of Education is palpable. Staff, she says, are treated disrespectfully, not told whether they will be working remotely or in person until the last minute. A few weeks ago, we got called at 8:30 at night and were told that the next day we'd be teaching remotely. We then had to start making calls and emailing the families about the change. We were also expected to immediately pivot our lesson plans from in-person to online instruction, Fleece told reporters. It's frustrating to not know what to prepare for. It also seems unfair not to know what's happening until the last second. This has happened many times since September. These, Pringle says, are frequent complaints, but she continues, the NEA survey revealed another even more horrifying trend. Nearly half of the teachers of color interviewed, including 43% of black teachers, told researchers that the decision to stop teaching has been hastened by COVID. Nonetheless, it's not the only reason they are dissatisfied. When we talk about diversifying the field, we have to take on institutional racism, Pringle says. We know that people of color are being disproportionately impacted by the pandemic. Teachers of color are fearful for their own and their families' health and are less trusting that the government will do anything to protect them. Pringle also notes that teachers of color tend to work in schools that are under-resourced, less able to provide enough personal protective equipment, PPE, and space to make socially distanced learning possible. Yet, despite pervasive racial inequities, Pringle reports that when surveyed, neither veteran nor new teachers cited combating racial bias, an admittedly huge problem, as the most critical issue facing them. Instead, she says, they reported that their jobs would be far more satisfying if they felt appreciated and valued. When pressed on specifics, she says that the school personnel want to be included in decision-making, receive support to develop the skills needed to teach effectively, whether in person, fully remote, or in hybrid classrooms, be provided with adequate PPE to protect themselves and their students, and to be able to rely on school-based services to assist students who are dealing with a host of traumas. No district had a line item in last year's budget called coronavirus, but we need to deal with it and work collaboratively to address a number of urgent needs, including the disruption of education provoked by the virus, Pringle told reporters. Pringle added, we know that black, brown, and indigenous students, homeless students, low-income kids, and kids with disabilities did not have the same access to technology as their richer peers. We need to address these gaps and do it in a way that acknowledges that these gaps have existed forever. We then have to reclaim public education as a racially and socially just public good that can prepare every single one of us to succeed in our lives. The challenge, according to American Federation of Teachers, AFT, President Randy Weingarten, is that there are 13,000 disparate school districts across the U.S. and no consensus on how best to teach during a pandemic. She blames this on the Trump administration, which she charges offered absolutely no guidance to localities. Not only that, but because of austerity measures that began more than a decade ago, many towns and cities face a shortage of teachers, experienced substitutes, paraprofessionals, and other support staff pre-pandemic. These losses, coupled with the layoffs of an additional 688,300 public educators from pre-K to college level between the start of the pandemic and September 30, have left the school administrators scrambling and overwhelmed. Worse, she continues, all of the information unions have about teachers leaving and retiring early is anecdotal, since the Department of Education did not deign to collect data on this. All of this has created the conditions for the exodus of thousands of dedicated educators, folk frustrated by continued cutbacks, layoffs, and ever tighter budgets, larger classes and increased workload, fear of catching the virus and infecting others, and a lack of confidence that administrators and lawmakers will come together to develop a strategy for mitigating the pandemic and supporting public health. Another less talked about issue, Weingarten says, is the development of a plan to provide reasonable accommodations, including the ability to work remotely for those who need them. When the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA, was passed in 1990, no one foresaw the need for accommodations that address someone's fear of bringing a virus home to a family who is immune compromised, Weingarten said. As written, the ADA has stringent requirements for who gets or does not get accommodation. Only people with physical or mental impairments that limit their functioning are considered disabled. But with COVID, people can spread the virus even if they are asymptomatic and may need to work remotely to protect others.
Spiritual message of Islam.
His door is open no matter who you are. Just take the first step, you'll see it's not so far. If we all open our eyes to see, he is all that we need right now. And we can all come together somewhere, somehow.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. La hawla wa la quwwata illa billahi al-Aliyyi al-Azim. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين. أجل الله تعالى فرجه الشريف وجعلنا من أعوانه وأنصاره وشيعته. We've been studying different features of the community of Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, and after studying the necessity of being balanced, being truthful, being united, we talked about the necessity of observing the rights of each mu'min. And we said there are lots of rights that mu'minin should observe, and these are indeed to keep the community together and form a very solid, united community, like one body, as Rasulullah said, that the example of mu'minin in their love, in their sympathy, in their affection is like one jasad. مثل المؤمنين في توادهم وتراحمهم وتعاطفهم كمثل جسد. It's like one body. Different cells and organs of the same body. I want now to mention a very important hadith, and then inshallah we move on to another characteristic of the community of Ahlul Bayt, and that is to do Amr al-Ma'ruf and Nahy al-Munkar. This hadith is a very important hadith in Mustadrak. قال قلت لأبي عبد الله عليه السلام ما حق المؤمن على المؤمن. We had a hadith yesterday. Mu'alla ibn Khunais had asked Imam Sadiq, this is another hadith, what is the right of mu'min over another mu'min? Imam said, إِنَّ مِنْ حَقِّ الْمُؤْمِنَ عَلَى الْمُؤْمِنِ الْمَوَدَّةَ لَهُ فِي صَدْرِهِ. The first thing is that you should love your brothers and sisters. There must be real love in your chest for them. We are not a community that are kept close to each other because of power of force, or, you know, I don't know, because of some, you know, selfish reasons, or because we want to, you know, gain something in dunya, or like a political party. They may hate each other, but they work together for some reason. We are a community that are together because we love each other. Love for Allah and love for Ahlul Bayt has made us love each other. So the first right is to love your brothers and sisters in your heart, in your chest. وَالْمُوَاسَاتَ لَهُ فِي مَالِهِ. If you have something and your brother, sister doesn't have enough, you share your money with them. وَالْخَلَفْ لَهُ فِي أَحْلِهِ. If your brother or sister travels, goes for Hajj, goes for business, is ill, in, admitted in hospital, for any reason he or she is absent, you look after the family, help them. So try to somehow replace and fill the gap. وَالنُّصْرَحْ لَهُ عَلَى مَنْ ظَلَمَهُ. If someone has done zulm to him, you support him. وَإِنْ كَانَ نَافِلَةً فِي الْمُسْلِمِينَ وَكَانَ غَائِبًا أَخَذَ لَهُ بِالنَّصِيبِهِ. If something is distributed, you know, for example, at that time when there was public, you know, treasury house, Baytul Mal, sometimes there were some booties, something, you know, some profits, they were dividing. So if someone was absent, was losing perhaps, there was no bank account to put in the bank account. So if there is anything which is distributed, which is good, you keep for your brother and sister.
Oh, what a wonderful world this would be if we all open our eyes to see. He is all that we need right now, and we can all come together somewhere, somehow. His door is open no matter who you are. Just take the first step, you'll see it's not so far. Down this road that holds all the answers. Open your heart to something greater. His holy book speaks pure and true, and always tells us what we must do. His last prophet was sent as a guide, an example by which we abide. There is salvation for those who seek to find the one and only source of peace and understanding of why we are here, who created us, who we must fear. So what a wonderful world this would be if we all open our eyes to see. He is all that we need right now, and we can all come together somewhere, somehow.
وَإِذَا مَاتَ الزِّيَارَ إِلَىٰ قَبْرِ. If he or she dies, you don't forget. Say, okay, as long as he or she is alive, you know, we are close, but then we forget. No. Even after death, we have to remember, visit them. Alhamdulillah, this community is very loyal to the dead people, and I very much appreciate that. Even in the wedding, they remember the dead people. It's very important. وَأَلَّا يَكْذِبَهُ or يُكَذِّبَهُ. Item is not to tell lies to each other or not to deny and reject each other. A mu'min doesn't tell lies to the brother and sister, and also when he speaks, doesn't say you are a liar. Believes in what he says. Of course, sometimes you take also some measure to check, you know, if there is something which has some legal impact, but you don't say you are a liar. You say, I respect what you say, but then you also do some investigation if it is needed. And then, look at this. وَأَلَّا يَقُولَ لَهُ أُفْ. You know, Allah says in the Quran, you cannot say أُفْ to your mother, to your father. What does أُفْ mean? It means to say that I am, you know, tired. I am, you know, fed up. You are boring. You are, you know, making me suffer. And our hadith says this is the least that can be said in word. Of is very slight, very gentle, but still we must not say this to our parents. And this is for all parents, whether they are Muslim, kafir, any parent, we should be very careful not to be impolite. But mu'mineen also should be very polite with each other. Mu'min has great respect. Even some hadith says the respect of mu'min is more than Kaaba. Hurmatul Muslim. Allah's expectation from us is to have such regard for Muslim that we have for Kaaba. So you cannot say to mu'min that I don't like you, I na'uzu billah hate you, go away, get lost. This is not what you say to mu'min. وَإِذَا قَالَ لَهُ أُفْ فَلَيْسَ بَيْنَهُمَا وِلَايَةٌ. If you say to mu'min أُفْ, then your wilaya finished. Because between mu'mineen, there is wilaya that connects them with each other and with Allah and Ahlul Bayt. المؤمنون والمؤمنات بعضهم أولياء بعض. Mu'mineen are wali for each other. They are guardians for each other. If a mu'min says bad things, bad words to his brother and sister, and says, I hate you, I don't like you, I don't want to see you anymore, then the wilaya is finished.
I'm looking back throughout the years to breathe is hard and my eyes are choked with tears. Your face and hair are full of light. Now it will soon be time to go. I feel you feeling calm now. Did the angel let you know?
Oh Allah, please send your salutations to Muhammad and all Muhammad. Oh Allah, please forgive us. Please forgive all our sins and mistakes and shortcomings. Please enable us to serve you with full honesty and truthfulness and sincerity. Please include us among the best followers of Muhammad and all Muhammad. Please protect and safeguard our community and our families and our youths from everything that you don't like. O Allah, please hasten the reappearance of Imam Zaman Ajjalallahu Ta'ala Farajahu Sharif. Please make our Imam Zaman happy with what we do and what we say. Please answer his du'as for his faraj. Please give shifa to all people who are ill. Please give shifa to people who are ill in their body and in their soul. O Allah, please send your rahmah, your forgiveness to all who have passed away, especially brothers and sisters who were attending these majalis in this community and other communities. Our parents, our foreparents, our teachers, our ulama, our maraji, those who have passed away. Please let them be with Muhammad and all Muhammad right now. And please give long life and blessed life to the parents and to the teachers and maraji who are alive. O Allah, please make the last moment of our life the best moment of our life. Wa akhiru da'wana and alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.
That was the characters of Shia community by Hujjatul Islam, Dr. Shomali, in the program, The Spiritual Message of Islam.
My Ummah, he will say, Rasulullah on that day, even though we've strayed from him and his way. My brothers, my sisters in Islam, let's struggle, work and pray. If we are to bring back the glory of His way. Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alameen, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي let the Ummah rise again, let us see daylight again, once again let's become.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 49 meters, 7,300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.